Cardinals. Play action. Going for it all into the end zone, and it is caught. Alshon Jeffrey for the touchdown.
Welcome back in, Eagles fans, to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, available as always on the Locked On Podcast Network. It is Lou DiBiase hanging out with you for another installment of the show. Today is Friday, July 20th, and we are continuing our positional preview as Eagles training camp is officially 5 days away. Next Wednesday, we kick off the 2018 season for the Philadelphia Eagles, who attempt to defend their 2017 Super Bowl title, and we got it all covered right here on the Locked On Eagles Network. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, pretty much anywhere that you can find podcasts. We are up and available on there. Leave a review. Let us know how we're doing. Hit me up as well, at DiBiaseLOE on Twitter. And, of course, all of our content is always posted right on the mothership, the website, LockedOnEagles.com. And if, like I was just talking about defending a championship, you're going to need weapons to do that. And the Eagles have a plethora of weapons. If not just we're talking about, we talked about running backs yesterday. You can go out and check that podcast is up and available. But the receiver position is absolutely stacked, and it's one of the reasons, honestly, I'm so confident with this Eagles team because they've gotten better pretty much at every position this offseason. But wide receiver, I think, is going to take even a bigger step than they did last year with Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Aguilar, and Zach Ertz counts in there as a tight end, but we're going to get into tight ends tomorrow on our positional previews segments here in the Locked On Eagles podcast. But today we're talking about receivers, and honestly, this might be the most talented wide receiver core in Eagles history. You know, there was, the most talented core. So the Eagles really don't have a great wide receiver history when you think about it. Harold Carmichael in the 70s, a 6'8 receiver that just was born in the wrong era. If he was born now, he would be, you know, a Calvin Johnson type player in the NFL. But outside of him, Mike Quick was also with the team. The entire Donovan McNabb era, really, who did the Eagles have? He was throwing to the likes of Todd Pinkston, Freddie Mitchell, James Thrash. There weren't a lot of really impressive people that Donovan McNabb threw to outside of Terrell Owens for one season, and that doesn't count. It wasn't long enough to count, so maybe really the best era until now was DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, and Jason Avant, probably. Those three that were the consistent core from 2009 up until 2014, so around five seasons, that was really the main group, although they didn't really reach the ceiling that I think they were capable of. But now, I think, not just, you know, last year was really good with Alshon and Aguilar, but Torrey Smith was a liability last year in the offense. He was. In the playoffs, he stepped up big time, but in the regular season, he was not what we needed him to be. And this year, you add a guy like Mike Wallace. I think Mac Hollins takes another step up. Shelton Gibson. We're going to get into those guys later on in the show. But this is the deepest and most talented I have seen this Eagles receiving position in their franchise history. And there's just so much complementary skill. You know, Jeffrey's the big go up and get it, the complete number one receiver, you know, who gets open with route running, with good hands, you know, contested catches. He's so good at that. He's, you know, a huge receiver and an NBA type guy, you know, where you can throw it up and he'll go up and get it. You saw that firsthand on the biggest stage in the Super Bowl. I remember where he caught that incredible, it was the most impressive touchdown catch I've ever seen over Eric Rowe. You remember Eric Rowe in the Super Bowl. So Alshon is that complete guy. And then, you know, Mike Wallace and Aguilar, they're the deep threats who are also the best run-after-the-catch receivers. You know, Shelton Gibson, I add into that category. And Mac Hollins is kind of a mix of everything. He can do a lot of things that Alshon Jeffrey can do body type-wise. You know, if he has to make contested catches in traffic, I do think Mac Hollins can do that. He's a good blocking receiver, but he's also got some underrated speed to him. You know, you saw that firsthand at UNC, but this is the deepest firsthand, and I think Carson Wentz is going to be even better this year. I know it's hard to top 33. But he is set up perfectly to continue right where he left off last year when he threw that touchdown to Alshon Jeffrey against the Rams and he went off the field to learn that he tore his ACL. I think this receiving core and this weaponry on offense is going to make it very easy for whoever's playing quarterback for the Eagles throughout the season. And it starts with Alshon Jeffrey. And I think he is a complete number one receiver. This has been kind of a debate that was going on last week in Eagles Twitter after Chris Raybon of ESPN pretty much came out and said Alshon Jeffrey isn't a number one receiver. And I think that claim is pretty silly. Alshon was top 15 in targets last year, but he was fourth in lowest percentage of catchable targets. So a lot of those targets were going over his head. They weren't good passes. You know, here or there, a lot of it, you know, being a low percentage of catchable targets, that's also on you to, you know, get open on that part. But a lot of it, again, there's factors to that. The quarterback misreading it, there's miscommunications here and there. So although Alshon was top 15 in targets and it seemed like he had a lot of opportunities, he was fourth in lowest percentage of catchable targets last year. And he was in an offense that loved to spread the ball around, go to the hot hand. Carson Wentz was going through his reads. It didn't really matter who the receiver was that was open, he was going to make plays for the best decision. You know, he was going based on the reads. He was not throwing to a receiver. He was throwing to an area. He was throwing to a weakness of the defense. You know, it had to do with the film study. You know, which positions did the defense struggle with, which type of routes, and then with those routes, who of the receiving core was the strongest. So really, there wasn't, it's not a type of offense where it's like the Tony Romo, Dez Bryant, Dallas Cowboys, or the Calvin Johnson, Matt Stafford, Detroit Lions era, where it was, you know, he's our best receiver, and we're just going to force him the ball over and over and over again until the defense submits. It's not that type of offense, and Alshon understood that, and he still came here because he wanted to win in Philadelphia, and he thought that he had the best chance to win with the Eagles, and by God, that was the best decision he could have ever made. And he ended up getting rewarded for it with a contract extension. And there isn't a stat for being unselfish like he was. The receiver position has a knack for bringing in high character, or you know, high character guys, you know, like Alshon Jeffrey, but high maintenance players like. With the Philadelphia Eagles, DeSean Jackson, I don't want to call him high maintenance, but if he wasn't getting targets, that's something that bothered him. And Terrell Owens, you know, the list goes on. Randy Moss, Odell Beckham, Antonio Brown. You know, wide receivers, they want the football, and they have a diva-esque quality to them that they just, that's how the position really has been throughout its history. There's outliers to every example, but for the most part, a lot of the big time players at wide receiver get a little cranky when they don't get the ball, and that just wasn't Alshon Jeffrey, and it's just so impressive considering, you know, he had every choice in free agency not to come to Philadelphia. He could have went to Minnesota and been the number one, I mean, probably the number one wide receiver was Stephon Diggs there, but you know, he could have went to any team and been the number one target and got paid and just caught a million footballs throughout the regular season, but he wanted to play through into the postseason and win a championship, and that he thought he had the best chance with the Eagles, and of course he did. So the unselfishness was just so impressive with Alshon last year, and it's just a part that I think goes maybe under the rug a little bit outside of Eagles fans, really, of course, complimenting him on that trait. But Raybon also totally discredited that Alshon Jeffrey had 12 touchdowns last year. He had 9 in the regular season, then he had 3 in the playoffs. So, and that's not fair, considering that's such a huge part of being a football player, right? The objective is to score, and especially for a big body like Jeffrey, who one of his main roles is to score touchdowns as a receiver, especially in the red zone, because he is such a big body and he's a number one receiver and he's relied upon. You know, Carson Wentz only threw 16 touchdowns in his rookie year, so Alshon Jeffrey was brought in also to boost the passing game, not just through yards and receptions, but to get in the end zone. And you can't just say, you know, Alshon Jeffrey, oh, let's X, not counting the 12 touchdowns he scored, wasn't a very good wide receiver last year. Well, it's like, no, you can't just discredit that. That's a part of it. It's like saying pretty much, you know, outside of the 65% or 67% completion percentage and 4,000 yards last year from said quarterback and 40 touchdowns, he did throw, you know, 17 interceptions, making him a bad player. You can't just ignore a stat. You can't ignore a strength when you're talking about a overall debate about a player. And that's just especially for a receiver, you can't discredit 12 touchdowns in a year. Especially, a lot of the, some of the most important came at the biggest stages. We look back to the Rams game, the Carson Wentz torn ACL touchdown where he threw it to Alshon. Alshon Jeffrey was on a torn rotator cuff, by the way, throughout the entire season. Did you see the touchdown catch against the Rams where he barely brought it up against on the ground, beating Tremaine Johnson in that play? How about the Patriots one over Eric Rowe? A torn rotator cuff, and he was making plays like that on the biggest stages, you know, against a NFC juggernaut in the Rams, where if the Eagles lose that game, they end up falling to the 3 seed and we're not in a position to get a bye week. Then, of course, the Super Bowl. He steps up. The NFC Championship game. He seeps behind what is one of the best secondaries in the league with the Minnesota Vikings and scores that touchdown to pretty much set the blowout in motion against the Minnesota Vikings. It's just there's. You can't ignore the touchdowns. You can't ignore the big moments where he stepped up. And you can't ignore the postseason success. If a player saves his best performance for the postseason, that is a trait that I will take all day, every day. Alshon Jeffrey is a number one corner. And before the show, I actually did a film review. So I went back and watched just a few games of Alshon Jeffrey against some really good corners in the NFL. And I went back to his game against Denver, where he went up against Chris Harris and Aqib Talib. He ended up with 6 catches that game, 84 yards and 2 touchdowns. Of 9 catchable battles against Chris Harris and Aqib Talib, he won 7 of them. And one, I did count that he won, although it went right off his hands and he did drop it. But nonetheless, he did beat Chris Harris on that route on the outside and could have had a first down, but it just went right off his hands. But so against Chris Harris and Aqib Talib, he won 7 battles of 9 that were catchable throws from Carson Wentz, and he ended up scoring 2 touchdowns in that game. So that's one, because I know some Eagles media members, I won't name names, and some national media members think Alshon Jeffrey is more of a number two, and he doesn't really succeed against the better corners in the league. But when you look back at it, it's really, you know, sometimes he struggled. He did struggle when Stephon Gilmore went on him against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. It's a real thing. But then there's also games like the Rams, where he went up against Tremaine Johnson, a really big physical corner that's one of the better corners in the NFL, especially in man-to-man coverage, which is what the Rams had on Jeffrey in that game. They had Johnson just travel and shadow Jeffrey throughout that entire game. He had 5 catches for 52 yards and a touchdown in that one, including the game winner, basically, against Johnson in the red zone. Of catchable battles, he won 6.5 of 9, and I'll tell you where I got the half. He drew a pass interference on one, and then where I got the half is that he lost a battle with Tremaine Johnson on a back shoulder throw. But he did draw a taunting call on Johnson, which ended up giving the Eagles a first down. So, although he lost the battle with Johnson there, as Johnson kind of tipped the ball out of Jeffrey's chest, Alshon did beat him on the route, but Johnson, with him being the long corner with a big wingspan that he is, got around Jeffrey and knocked it down. But Alshon drew a taunting call on him, so he won 6.5 of 9. So against Tremaine Johnson, he won the battle, and against Aqib Talib and Chris Harris, he won the battle. There were consistent examples throughout the regular season of Alshon having success against really good defenses and really good secondaries. So although, yeah, is he not? I don't want to say Alshon Jeffrey's an elite wide receiver. I wouldn't put him in the conversation with Odell Beckham and Antonio Brown, but he certainly is a number one wide receiver that belongs in the conversation for being a top 10 wideout. He's not going to be a guy that just dominates against every single corner and every defense, but he's a consistent, reliable player that you know can get you at least 60 yards a game, and that's really what you want from him. I saw the stat from Ruben Frank, who of NBC Philadelphia. He wrote in his piece on this matter. He defended Alshon Jeffrey against Raybon. He said, you know, Alshon he didn't have a 100-yard game, but he had 60 or more yards 9 times. So which would you rather have, 3 100-yard games or 6 to 9 games of 60-plus yards? You know, I'd rather have that than what DeSean Jackson used to give us. I love DeSean Jackson, but with the Eagles, there'd be times where he has 4 catches for 130 yards and a touchdown, including and then a big punt return, And then there were also times where DeSean Jackson would have three catches for 17 yards, and he would disappear in the offense just because he's not just dependent on deep plays, but DeSean Jackson was a home run hitter that was not a number one wide receiver. He is a number two, although his numbers, he got to the 1,000-yard mark a good amount, but and he's been paid like a number one wide receiver. He's not the type of player, though, that in crunch time you can go to consistently and he can always make a play for you. He is a limited football player. I love DeSean Jackson. He's a fringe number one, but when we're comparing him to Alshon Jeffrey is the far superior target when we're coming to consistency here. So Alshon is a number one wide receiver, and I don't think he is appreciated enough in the NFL. I don't think I really even appreciated him as much last year because I was so caught up in the Carson Wentz hype and the Nelson Aguilar comeback story and how good Zach Ertz became. The breakout season we were all waiting for Zach Ertz finally came, although he's been a really good tight end, top of the league, since he was drafted, so in 2013. But Ertz definitely last year was his big, big season, where he became one of the elite tight ends. So I think Alshon Jeffrey kind of, he didn't go unnoticed, but I think he definitely is, maybe was, by at least my standards, I think he was underappreciated by me at least. I don't know. I think he was maybe a little bit underrated in his impact with the team through my eyes. But Alshon, hands down a lock number one wide receiver if you ask me. And then you go to Nelson Aguilar in the slot, best third down receiver last year pretty much in football. Wentz's QBR when targeting Aguilar on third downs last year was a 137. He had 9 catches in the Super Bowl, and just after his first 2 seasons, we did a show, Locked On Nelson Aguilar. If you want to go check it out, I went more in depth on Aguilar, but where he was to where he was, in his first 2 years to what he became last season was just so impressive, considering he had the worst start to a football career that I've ever seen. And it's a mental thing, and when it's a mental thing, it's so hard to bounce back from. But Aguilar last year, he shook it. He looked fast. He was incredible in contested plays, deep balls. When the play broke down, Carson Wentz, when he was looking down the field, he went to Nelson Aguilar. He really looked like DeSean Jackson a lot of the time last year. He ran confident, and he is going to, I think, take another step this year and play in the slot again. I think Mike Wallace is, although Wallace had experience in the slot with Baltimore, I think Aguilar is going to continue to play there. He'll get more work on the outside this year, I'm sure, but I don't really want to mess with it, to be honest with you. I don't want to mess with his psyche. He's got a really good thing going right now. And the NFL is going to an area where a lot of the elite receivers are coming out of the slot. Adam Thielen's one of the best wide receivers in football, and he did most of his damage last year in Minnesota from the slot. And him and Aguilar were probably the two best slot receivers in football last year. And that's just so crazy to think, going from nearly being cut from the team, a first-round bust hands down, to suddenly being one of the elite players at his position when we're talking about just a slot receiver. I don't want to call him an elite wide receiver in football. I think that's very irresponsible, but as a slot receiver last year, he was absolutely elite. So I am so excited to see the step that Aguilar takes in year 4. And the great part is the Eagles have him for at least 2 more seasons. They picked up his 5th-year option, so we get him, the Eagles get him next year and in 2019 on a very reasonable contract. So they don't have to pay him really for another 2 years. They can focus on other areas of the team, and the Eagles get one of the best slot receivers in football. And what a great move it was, moving him to the slot. Moving on from Jordan Matthews and putting Aguilar in there was one of the best moves the Eagles made all season last year. And I'm so excited to see what they do with him this year, because we did see some new wrinkles to the offense in the playoffs with Aguilar, as Doug Peterson used a lot of different counters and reverses that created space for Aguilar as a runner. But because when we go back to his USC days, Aguilar was a really good run after the catch wide receiver, and he's the best at that of any of these Eagles players. On the offense, there were big plays to be had from Zach Ertz and Alshon Jeffrey, but a lot of them were, it was a big play because Alshon Jeffrey or Ertz went up to get it and they brought it down. They were big plays down the field, but it wasn't really a catch and run and explode out of your break type of play. that was Nelson Aguilar, though. Really, any run after the catch touchdowns the Eagles had last year were all Aguilar. You go back to the Week 1 Washington big play, the Seattle game on Sunday Night Football, the touchdowns against Carolina and Washington in back-to-back weeks, which were, you know, quick outs and in routes to Aguilar from Carson Wentz, and Aguilar does the rest with his feet. And I think they're going to use him as a runner even more in 2018. It's just so exciting that Aguilar is a factor in this offense now, considering I'll be the first to admit I was completely wrong about Aguilar. I thought he was dead in the water as a football player and that his career was shot, because when it's something like Aguilar was suffering from, which is just a pure psyche thing, dropping passes, just not being able to bounce back. Remember the Seattle game 2 years ago where after he just said, "I can't get out of my own head," and he looked like he was on the verge of breaking out into tears? I mean, you had to feel for the guy, and it was just the coolest comeback story. And I said it on the Locked On Nelson Aguilar podcast, the fact that he was the first player to receive a Super Bowl ring was awesome, because there was no one that represented the 2017 Super Bowl roster more than Aguilar, from where all the adversity that he came from and where he succeeded last year is just one of the best and cool stories from the Eagles. And I'm just so excited to see what he does in 2018 for his encore performance. And then we add Mike Wallace to the fold. Mike Wallace is going to be a big upgrade over Torrey Smith. I think more than people really think. The Mike Wallace signing, I think, went under the radar this year. And look, he was the only thing that worked in an abysmal Baltimore passing game. You know, he could just do more than Torrey Smith did. He plays out of the slot a lot. He was, by the way, the best slant route runner in 2016 of any wide receiver was Mike Wallace, according to Pro Football Focus, ahead of guys like Jarvis Landry, who make their money on plays like slant routes. So I think that's going to put the Eagles in a position where they're going to try to get him the ball in space a lot like they do with Aguilar. It's not going to just be streaks, where I feel like with Torrey Smith, he was really just running a couple routes. I think that Wallace is going to be used more like Aguilar than he's going to be used like Torrey Smith was last year. And I think they're going to be used in many of the same but complementing ways. And he's just more explosive. And he's only, by the way, he's only 1 year removed from a 1,000-yard season. I think people forget his first year in Baltimore, he had over 1,000 yards. So Torrey Smith really has been done since his Baltimore days, whereas Mike Wallace is still a really productive wide receiver that, you know, Torrey Smith was a really good deep threat throughout his career, but Mike Wallace has a lot better ability in that area right now. And that is an area that, although the Eagles, again, they were a big play offense last year, they didn't have those home run, boom type passes a whole lot like they used to. You know, the Arizona game, they did have one to Torrey Smith. Wentz had a couple to Aguilar throughout the season, but there weren't a whole lot of 60-yard bombs down the field. There were some big 30-yard catches here and there, but with Mike Wallace, I think you're going to see at least once a game, Mike Wallace is going to get behind the safety and get behind the defense and either make a really big play or he's going to draw a pass interference call. He's going to be very valuable to this team next year, and he's even a threat in the red zone. I was watching over some Mike Wallace tape before this podcast, and in his 2 years in Baltimore, Joe Flacco, I mean, of course, it was probably because of limited options, but he really went to Mike Wallace in the red zone. So Wallace is just a much more complete wide receiver than Torrey Smith, and he's got a much more diverse route tree than Torrey Smith. Smith ran a lot of goes, a lot of curls, some, you know, quick slants and stuff, but Torrey Smith was very one-dimensional last year. And again, I don't want to bash Smith too much because I love him as a person and as a teammate. You know, he was one of the best Twitter follows. He's such a great impact in the community, outspoken when it comes to issues in the country, and he did step up in the playoffs. You know, he caught that flea flicker touchdowns against the Minnesota Vikings, so he's part of one of the greatest plays in Eagles history. Also one of the wonkiest plays in Eagles history, if we go back to the Falcons divisional round game where he caught that pass. Remember when it went Foles through it? It was a clear pick to one of the Falcons' safeties. Went right off his chest, bounced like 20, you know, 15 yards on the field. Torrey Smith runs up and catches it and gets a first down for the Eagles. So he was a part of some big moments last year, and he made some big catches against the Patriots in the Super Bowl, some underrated ones. I've actually posted on LockedOnEagles.com a most underrated plays article from the Super Bowl, and Torrey Smith was part of one when he basically reenacted the helmet catch of David Tyree. So go check that out, shameless plug. But, you know, Torrey Smith was a helpful player last year, but he, I don't think, is going to be anywhere near the level that Mike Wallace is going to produce for the Eagles in 2018. And then you go to, let's go to the young guys, you know, Shelton Gibson and Matt Collins. I went back because Shelton Gibson was a guy I liked coming into the draft in 2017, but after last year, I kind of went cold on him just because of the struggles he had throughout the summer. But I went back to watch Gibson at West Virginia just to kind of refresh my memory of what we liked in this guy and what the Eagles really liked. And man, that guy runs angry. He runs mad. He could eventually probably be Mike Wallace's replacement down the road, or as Zach Moore of Over the Cap suggested to me, maybe Aguilar ends up getting traded at some point if they don't want to pay two receivers big money. And that's someone I could see in Shelton Gibson that has a significant role in the Eagles' offense in the future. He's got world-class speed when we're talking about on the field. He ran only a 4.5 in the combine, which blows my mind because of how fast he runs in the game. His game speed is so much better than what he clocked heading into the draft, but he's a really good run after the catch guy. At first, when he was initially drafted, I thought he was a DeSean Jackson type, like, ooh, this guy's going to give us some big plays this year, but he is a deep threat, a limited player. That's really not the case. He plays fast, and he showed good hands, contested catches. I think Shelton Gibson has a bright future for the Eagles, but he has to play fast. You know, mentally, not just physically, which means he's got to understand routes. He's got to be comfortable with, you know, doing the harder things as a receiver, you know, blocking, the intricacies, footwork, his vision. He's got to play more comfortable so that he can use that athleticism and speed that he has that made him such a hot commodity for the Eagles. And look, Howie Roseman kept him on the roster for a reason last year. And it's because they believe in his development. They think he can be a guy down the road that can make plays for this offense. Roseman even said last year, because I think Gibson and Donnell Pumphrey were two questionable players that he kept on the roster just based on their performance in the preseason alone, because neither guy really stepped up to the plate in the preseason. But Roseman even said, and I agreed with this assessment, that he justified keeping Gibson on the roster because it really just isn't about what a guy's going to give you in year one. What he is right now is not what they expect him to be, you know, 4 years down the road. They took, you know, when you draft a player, you're not drafting a player for what they're going to be in year one. You hope they produce soon. And of course, it's easier to justify keeping a player that's a developmental project if he's a first or second or third round pick, a day one or day two pick. But still, even if you're taking a guy like Shelton Gibson in the sixth round, you don't want to just give up on that player after a couple months. And that's what Howie Roseman justified as to why he kept Gibson. And I'm for it. I understand the logic, because if, you know, he's like Nelson Aguilar and he doesn't really hit his stride until year three. Wide receivers, by the way, take a pretty long time to develop. It's not every year is going to be like 2014, where 5,000 rookie receivers contribute and become big-time NFL players. You know, it's a tough position to translate over into the NFL from college to the pros, considering it's just so much more complex when we're talking about routes. You know, in college, a lot of these spread offenses have a pretty basic route tree, and that Shelton Gibson, I feel like, ran a pretty basic route tree at West Virginia. So you got to give this guy time, and he's someone I'm really going to keen in the preseason and training camp when I go down there to Philadelphia to watch, because he's a player I'm expecting big things of. And even Mike Groh, the wide receiver coach last year, he's now the offensive coordinator. This is what he said in November of the regular season on Shelton Gibson. Quote, "He's very focused about improving his game each and every week and each and every day. He's a pleasure to work with. He works his tail off, takes notes. He's into the game plan and does everything that we're asking him to do." So the coaches didn't have to mention a scratch player in November in the thick of a playoff race. But Mike Groh talked up Shelton Gibson and his work ethic. And I think Gibson is going to be a potential breakout player maybe in 2018, not from a standpoint of, oh, he's going to beat out Wallace, Aguilar, or Jeffrey, but as a guy that now suddenly you think, whoa, we actually have something here. And I don't think a lot of people are maybe thinking of that with Shelton Gibson. People, I think, are thinking that with Matt Collins. But Gibson is actually the guy I'm higher on. I think Collins is going to get more snaps this year. He's going to probably rotate with Mike Wallace. But, you know, he did show he could get open last year. He has strong hands, underrated explosiveness. Matt Collins is a big boy. But I'm higher, honestly, if you had to ask me right now, who's going to be a better NFL player? I'm going to pick Shelton Gibson. I think Shelton Gibson has a much higher ceiling. I think Hollins is the safer bet, but I'm going to take a risk, and I'm going to say that Shelton Gibson's going to end up being something in the NFL, and I'm excited about his prospects. As a prospect, punny. God, that should end the pod there, but no, we must continue to grind. And I'd love to see Gibson, by the way, get some return work, too. I think that'd be an interesting part, maybe in the kickoff game, if they don't want to use Sproles as much in the punt return area. I think Shelton Gibson, that could help him also gain some confidence. Last thing on Gibson, I love how Aguilar has kind of taken him under his wing since, you know, Aguilar struggled with a lot of the same things that Gibson did. And this is a cool quote I got from Gibson on Nelson Aguilar. Quote, "I definitely lean on Nelly. Just seeing what he's done in the offseason, the way that he prepares every single day, the way he takes everything so seriously, I'm probably not doing everything that Nelly is doing right now, but I'm gradually getting into it, just asking him questions every day." Aguilar is the perfect guy to pick his brain about how he bounced back from his slow start to his NFL career. And considering they're very similar players, I really like that Gibson's kind of Nelson Aguilar's sidekick right now. But, you know, we start from the top with Jeffrey, Aguilar, Wallace. We go down to these young players and Matt Collins, Shelton Gibson. Heck, maybe even Greg Ward Jr. if the Eagles decide to keep a sixth receiver, him or Bryce Treggs. I'm very confident that if Jeffrey were to go down, knock on wood, because I don't want that to happen, or Mike Wallace or Aguilar, if one of these guys got injured, not only do they have tight ends to rely on, but I'm confident that Gibson and Matt Collins could step up and produce if the Eagles need them to do that. So this is probably the most talented that the Eagles have been at wide receiver in a very long time. And as a former receiver, I'm really excited about it because it's one of the positions I understand more than any other position in football. It's hard for me to really, really understand offensive lines. I do have a good understanding pretty much of all football. You know, I've been watching it for you know, 18 years, 19 years, but I played the position as a receiver, so I understand what it takes more to be successful in that area. So when I watched this Eagles receiving core this week, that, you know, refreshed my memory, it kind of really got me excited because I think that they're going to have a really big 2018 season, and I'm extremely excited for it. And that's going to conclude it for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Positional preview edition, wide receivers is what we got into today, talking about what could be one of the deepest cores of the Eagles roster in 2018. It's going to be an exciting time in training camp to watch these guys get to work. And tune in tomorrow because we're going to be talking about more pass catchers and blockers, and it's going to be the tight end position. We're going to get into Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert, Richard Rodgers, Billy Brown, the position that the Eagles are very strong in right now. They have one of the league's best in Ertz, a rookie that is a baller when it comes to big catches in Dallas Goedert, a.k.a. Philly Goedert, Richard Rodgers, Mr. Hail Mary when it comes back to the Aaron Rodgers play. We're going to get into all things tight ends tomorrow right here on Locked On Eagles and LockedOnEagles.com. That'll do it for myself, Lou DiBiase. Thank you all for tuning in. Please subscribe to the podcast. Follow me on Twitter, at DiBiase, L-O-E, and I'll see you back here right on Locked On Eagles tomorrow. Thank you, and let's go Birds.